Texas Warbird Report coming to you live today from EAA Air Venture Oshkosh 2016. We're live here on the grounds at the air show. It's a beautiful blue sky this morning. Nice and warm, Oshkosh. A little warmer than we'd like, I think, sometimes. But we got a little breeze going right now. It's a beautiful day. We're over here. If you happen to stream us and listen to us, come on over and see us. We're here next to the Cavanaugh guys with their restoration station. We've got a beautiful O1 or L1 Stinson L1 sitting here. It's a rare bird sitting here in front of us this morning. It's pretty cool. So I've got a couple of guests I'm gonna have on. I've got Mark Anderson. It's just out of South Texas. He's got a new L5 that he's restored, brought up here for judging. And I'm gonna be speaking here with Beth Ann Jenkins with the Devil Dog B25 out of Georgetown, Texas. And they brought their airplane up, and me and my son here, Hunter's here, hanging out with me, and we're camping down in Vintage with the Hartman and Hines show, which is always interesting, and down at Metro Warbirds last night for dinner, and watching things take off at sunset, but the Hartman show never quits.
I'm sitting right here beside you, but yeah. Sorry for putting you down there.
That's fine.
In the Hartman and Hines show camp. Oh, but Beth Ann has no idea what we're talking about over sitting here. But
I don't know if I want to know.
You don't, yeah. You
there,
don't
are a couple
know.
Of, there are a couple of Waco guys from...
actually, you'd have a really good time with them.
Yeah.
You really would. They're going to be here tomorrow, and God only knows what I'm saying.
They're kind of nutty, but playing games and having a good time down there, so... But it's a beautiful campsite down in Vintage under the trees and with the old airplanes. And we can watch the air show from under our tent. And it's a great place to be. So, but Beth Ann, welcome to Warbird Radio.
Thank you. It's glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad you're here. And I see you brought the Blue B-25 or a PBJ-1, right?
PBJ-1J. Yeah. It's the Marine version of a B-25.
Right. You guys are based in Georgetown.
We're based in Georgetown, Texas. Austin, Texas is now a suburb of Georgetown.
Yeah.
And we're part of the Commemorative Air Force.
Right.
The Commemorative Air Force is the largest flying museum in the United States, and we're the Devil Dog Squadron. Our sole purpose is to keep this airplane flying for the Commemorative Air Force.
Yeah, and it's been a Commemorative Air Force airplane for a long time, hasn't it?
Long time, since 1982.
Okay, yeah, I remember seeing it in Waco, I guess 85, 86, an air show down there, Sesquicentennial Air Show, I think. Maybe the first time I saw that airplane, but it was a little different nose art back then.
Yep.
But you're commemorating the Marine Corps that flew the airplane, and what was the mission?
The mission of the VMB 612 group that this airplane is based after, the number 3 ship, is they would go out at night with radar, and they would out of Okinawa, Iwo Jima, Tinian, and they were downing the ships,
okay,
the supply ships, to keep the supplies from the Japanese. And the number 3 ship, in her 22 missions, had downed three merchant ships and one imperial ship, and went out on her 23rd mission and never came back.
Wow.
So the gentleman that restored this airplane was with the VMB 612 and with part of the Confederate Air Force back then.
Right.
And wanted to honor his friends from the number 3 ship. And they didn't get to have nose art, but he put the nose art, because at night the nose art could reflect, the moon could reflect their,
sure,
location. So he put the nose art of the Marine mascot on, because a lot of people didn't know Marines had the B-25. So,
right,
of course, they designated him the PBJ-1J.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The B-25 served in all theaters.
It did. It was the most versatile bomber out there.
Yeah. From the famous Doolittle guys to flying off of little islands and skip bombing and everything else. And your airplane's configured with 50 calibers in the nose?
Yep. We've got the gunner nose.
Right.
And the VMB 611 had the gunner nose. We don't have the radar nose. We couldn't find one. And, it's got 12 forward guns there, and those 50 cals. Of course, you know, what's funny is I do a little math question with all the kids and say, okay, what is, they show them the 50 caliber bullet. And okay, so how many bullets in the belt? You know, so I get them to figure out the math of the bullets. And so now we got each gun has 324 bullets in it. And it could cut a ship in half with,
yeah,
the 12 forward guns.
Sure.
So it was a good, you know, the Marines learned early on you can't drop bombs on a moving target.
Right.
So they learned to skip bomb.
Yeah. No. And for folks that don't know what skip bomb, I mean, they would actually like skipping a rock on the water.
Yep. Come 10 feet, 20 feet over the water and pull up right the ship. And when they first got the airplanes, they had one gun in front. And so they were getting shot at a lot. And the crew chief said, well, we got to stop that. So they started putting guns on anywhere they could. And the engineers found out about it, went out in the field and said, okay, we'll design you the gunner nose. So they designed the gunner nose. The H model had the 75-millimeter cannon and, of course, the bombardier nose and the radar nose. So they had four designs for noses.
Yeah. But that all started as field modifications. It wasn't it was just guys in the field saying, hey, we need to do something different.
Right. Weren't doing quite right, but they were doing it.
I can imagine. I wonder how long it took for North American engineers to find out that was going on.
Right, because they figured you do that, you stop what you're doing, because you do a little bit more of that, it's going to collapse right here where that nose gear is. So let us design one. And they did that.
Yeah. So has this airplane always been a PB? I mean, is it, you have history
it's
of it?
It's actually a J model. It got as far as Hawaii before the war ended.
Okay.
And then it was a trainer at Reese Air Force Base.
Oh, in Lubbock, yeah.
And then the Confederate Air Force found it in Rockdale, Texas. The gentleman had five of them, and he was flying nitroglycerin down to South America for mining. And one of the pilots had been an old Luftwaffe pilot, who was one of the pilots who did that. And they did that as late as 73, because I had a lady come to me and told me her husband had been a co-pilot for him and flew one of the flights in 1973. So,
Did I hear that? Nitroglycerin?
Yes, you did.
Is that a good idea, Beth, to do that?
Well, evidently they had bungeed it so it would be free moving in the bomb bay.
And, lovely.
But they did it. I hadn't heard of any that lost, but there were five of them there that they were flying out of this grass strip.
Wow.
Flying nitroglycerin.
Off a grass strip at a B-25.
I wanted to ask Beth too what her thoughts on flight instruction are, because you have such a great academy there, your own school.
I have a Pilot's Choice Aviation in Georgetown, Texas. And
what do we need to do to foster more folks to get interested in this in this type of aviation, of flying these unique aircraft?
Well, I think the EAA's got it right as far as doing the Young Eagle rides. It's just getting expensive, and it's hard for people. And I'm so short-handed instructors, I turn people away right now for training.
Because you don't have enough instructors.
Yeah, I instructed 150 hours last month.
Wow.
A lot of it was the ATP people trying to get their check right before their written expired at the end of July. So, but I had to turn quite a few people away for that. But
For those that don't know, I guess the general aviation world had change in the practical test standard, or the written test standards. New tests came out.
New testing for the ATP pilots for their writtens, and to be more thorough with it. And so a lot of them took it to try to beat that.
And there more coming with the private pilot written going to be changed as well?
Pilot written is going to be changed. The private pilot is changed, and the instrument is changed. So the commercial and the CFI will change after that.
Getting a little off of the Warburg section, but that medical reform just passed.
Right.
For private pilots and Class 3 medical. It's a big change there.
Big change.
We'll see how that works in the future. Yeah. But I'm excited because I may just have to only take one more physical to qualify.
There you go.
Forever. So, we'll see how that goes.
But hopefully coming to these air shows with the Warbirds, getting the kids interested is what we want to do.
Well, I see. It seems like there's a younger group of pilots, especially in the CAF. Guys like Taylor Stevenson and Mark Todd. And, not that Mark's a young guy, but he's a younger guy compared to some of the guys in CAF. And there seems to be, and Steve Swift, you know him. And
David Oliver.
Yeah, David Oliver, exactly. He's like flying the B-29. There's a fairly young group of guys that seem to be interested in these airplanes that are coming along that is encouraging, for sure. So, but what do you guys do in your squadron to promote?
Well, being at the flight school, it's hangared in the flight school, a lot of the students get to see it. So we brought many of younger kids here to Oshkosh with us.
Okay.
Of course, then they get busy and go off to college. So hopefully I have one girl that just put a deposit down on a sponsorship that taught for me. So get her involved, and that'll be great. we'll get some younger kids involved.
Yeah, cool. Cool. Yeah, I've been in your hangar down there, and you've got, it's kind of cool, that whole wall of shirt tails, or First Solo shirt tails hanging on the wall. And But it's neat. And Georgetown's a neat airport. There's some interesting little airplanes there, and there's always some flying going on at that airport.
Yep.
So
a lot of experimentals, and yep. P-51, and
right.
Lots of T-6s. Yep.
So you flying in the, y'all flying in the air show?
We will fly today. Yesterday nobody had signed up, so I thought, well, I'm not going to be the only one, so I've talked to a couple other B-25s, so we'll have at least three B-25s
okay.
out there today.
Cool. Then there's, what, is there five here or four?
There's five here.
Yeah. Which is a good gathering.
Yes.
Yeah, but the others, they couldn't talk, you couldn't talk to the others?
I hadn't had a chance to talk to them yet.
Okay.
They weren't at their airplane.
No, oh, okay. All right. Well, maybe you can round them up. That'd be great to see five flying.
Well, that would be great.
Yeah. So how long have you been flying the B-25?
I have been flying the B-25 since 1996.
Okay. All right. So you got some time.
My type rating in 2007.
Yeah. Okay. And you go out on the road with it when you can on air shows? And
we do about 16, 18 trips a year.
Okay. All right. And how far do you go?
Oshkosh is usually our farthest.
Yeah.
When we had the Doolittle reunions, we'd gone to Urbana, Ohio. We've been to Sydney, Montana. They'll pay for us. We'll go.
You'll go. There you go. There you go. Well, I appreciate you joining us here this morning.
Well, thank you.
And look forward to seeing your airplane fly later today.
Everybody come out and see us at the B-25.
Yep. Come on out there. Parked out there on Bomber Row with the other B-25s. And it's a beautiful thing here at Oshkosh with all the warbirds. I don't know how many Mustangs are here, but I think we can see 20 or probably 15 right here from our vantage point. So
they're awesome.
Yeah, they blew me out of the shower this morning down there in camp with, seven of them took off this morning and at sunrise. It's always fun to see. So, well, it's good for you. Good. Thank you for joining us
coming
on with us. And happy flying.
I will.
All right.
All right, thank you.
We'll see you next time, Beth. Thanks.
Alrighty.
Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
You know, they have a really active Facebook page, too. We'll have to, we need to quick link that.
We'll link that.
And make sure. Mike Hartman walked over here. He's hanging around somewhere. I don't know where he's sitting right now. Where is he at? Is he behind me?
Yeah.
He's directly behind me.
Yeah, he's formating behind you.
Yeah. Mike is over here. And here, Mike, come here. Here, I got you right here. We're gonna let the real guest sit there. But good morning, sir. How are you?
Morning. How you doing?
Well, I'm fine. I heard you were cooking slowly last night at the Metro Warbirds party.
Well, we were down there for a little bit, and then we decided to actually go somewhere else.
Yeah, slow on the cooking.
Yes,
last night.
Yes. Well, you know, we just showed up early.
Yeah.
They were on time. We weren't. So,
yeah.
You know.
We got hungry, I guess.
Yes.
That happens. So are you ready for tomorrow? I mean, it's the big show's tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
For you.
Excited.
From AirVenture.
Yes.
Yeah. Looking forward to it.
Yes, I have no clue what we're doing yet.
Well, we do. Then.
As usual, probably a mystery guest, right?
No. It's the bombshells.
Oh,
Scott Slocum
right.
gang.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the bombshells. Tomorrow.
It'll be exciting. I don't think that's happening, but that'll be exciting.
It
never does. You
it
tell me that every
happening.
Year. There's
it
no
is
such
happening.
Thing. Doesn't happen.
It is happening.
Doesn't happen.
The bombshells are going
to
be here.
Supposed to have the ladies on, and it never happens.
Uh-huh. No, they're going to be here tomorrow. I guarantee it. I know they're going to be here because Scott Slocum said they were going to be here.
Oh, okay.
And Scott doesn't lie. He always tells the truth. And it's his 10-year anniversary, so he's going to come on tomorrow. You know him, Zane.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know
Scott.
You know all
Scott.
Of the women?
No, I don't.
Two?
So, no.
And, Mark does, I think.
I haven't been introduced to those folks.
Well, they're going to be here tomorrow.
You know, so.
We're going to watch
Zane,
we're going to watch Hartman
show?
Sweat it
huh?
out.
Did you have a good show?
We're still doing a good show.
Oh, I mean, so far. So we're
so
still
far.
In it. Okay.
Yeah,
I didn't know if we were yours and he was sitting in or what we're doing.
Hartman's ribbing me here.
Yeah.
Listen to this.
Yeah.
I'm very non-professional.
Listen to this. Listen to this. We're ready to go with your next guest. Mark is up now.
Yeah. Thanks for
go
coming
Go for
by.
It. Yes,
and,
thank you. See you guys
and
tomorrow.
And I want to say, personally, thank you for letting us camp with you.
Oh, no
You're
problem at all. No
Fantastic.
Problem.
Yeah.
No problem. Good to have you there.
All right. See you later, Mike. Next up, we have Mark Anderson. Mark, you here?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and this is his, you said it was your second trip to Oshkosh. You only spent a day here.
Yeah, we spent a day here last year just to see what it looked like on the ground before we were hoping to get up here flying our airplane.
Yeah, well, and so he's spending a week here, and so that really gets, it's interesting, isn't it?
Yes. It's a great place to be.
How many miles have you walked?
I don't know. Probably about 15. I've been sitting over by the airplane trying to answer questions, hoping that people come by and take a look at it.
Now, Mark is from I forget.
Well, we're from San Antonio.
Okay.
Parents live down in Dilley. San Antonio and Laredo.
There you go.
And I live up in Evergreen right now. I'm staying out of the heat.
Yeah.
Evergreen, Colorado.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. See, that's nice.
Yeah.
We go to New Mexico in the summer as well, so get up in the mountains where it's
cool. Yeah, I know where half the state goes every summer.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, the folks in Colorado claim they hate Texans, but they sure
love
our
money.
Yeah.
See, I still say our, like I'm still from there.
Yeah, well, you are. You know, you sound like us anyway, compared to, you betcha, going on up here, but in the great state of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
No offense meant. There's nothing wrong with that. But you've been working on an L5, and it's been a little bit of a project for you.
Yeah, and we acquired that thing as a project and didn't know what we were getting into quite.
So you started. You said you bought it just to have a little flyer in the hangar.
Yeah, I was back on active duty. I got recalled to active duty, and I was over in Germany. Could have been a lot worse places to go while you're on active duty.
Sure.
And I got to thinking about my parents have a place down by Dilley, and I thought, well, you know, we could probably make a grass strip down there, and we could get us a Cub or something, Super Cub, and maybe refinish it and fly it out of there. And I talked to my dad about it, and he, you know, was kind of okay with it, but wasn't really that enthused about it. So I don't know how many months later it was. I got an email from him, and it just said, bought an airplane. And I got another email later, and it had some of the pictures that you might have seen over there kind of pile of parts that came as what was supposed to be an airplane.
Yeah.
And the thing about it was he wasn't really looking for an airplane that day. He was looking through the San Antonio paper and the classifieds for farm equipment. And whoever the guy was that listed this mislisted it, and it wound up in the classifieds under farm equipment. So he's looking at tractor.
Yeah.
L5 airplane. And he wasn't interested in it. So he put the paper in the trash and thought about it all day. Couldn't get it out of his mind. Went back, pulled the paper out of the trash later, called the guy. He was up in Medina.
Okay.
Up by Bandera. And he said, yeah, we'll come up there and take a look at it. So he went up there and they looked at it and they said, yeah, we'll buy this. So they went back the next day with the trailer and rounded the whole thing up and took it down. We thought we were just going to make a flyer out of it. So we were expecting the normal. I think, guess everybody that gets a project says, we'll have this flying in about a year.
Yeah.
And then we went up to Fredericksburg after a couple of months and saw Taylor's airplane up there, his L5G.
Taylor Stevenson, yeah.
Yeah, and Lanny was there, Lanny Parcell. And so we stood around looking at that airplane thinking we wound up at a sort of a fluke with a piece of history.
Yeah.
And now we're going to have to restore it. We can't just make a flyer out
of it.
Right. So.
And so, but it started. I mean, you had a box of parts and basically a fuselage. And
yeah, we had a fuselage.
Wing parts, yeah.
Had a fuselage, and it was metalized. It had come from Alaska, and it had a bunch of R14 insulation like you'd have in your attic. It had that glued to the insides of it, and it turns out it had a pretty interesting history. It was it's an L5E1, so it's a real late model E, right before they started making the G model, and the difference was 12 volt for the planes prior to the G, and then the G model was 24 volt.
Okay.
So this was a real late model airplane. It was accepted by the Air Force's guy at the plant at Wayne, Michigan on June 6, 1945, so 1 year to the day after D-Day.
Yeah.
And he flew it out of there. I got the logs. He flew it out of there to Newark, and Newark is one of the main terminals for going overseas because it has rail, it has ships, it has highways, and it has an airstrip all in the same spot.
Yeah.
So this airplane was in the flow to go to Europe, but by June the war had ended in May of 45.
Right.
So he gets it to Newark, and it was there at Newark a couple of days, and they told him to fly it out to the west coast to Hamilton. Hamilton's kind of the Newark counterpart out in the San Francisco Bay area.
Yeah.
So they flew it cross country to Hamilton, And it was, you know, slotted to go over to Okinawa or whatever for the invasion of Japan.
Right.
Because this is now, you know, it's still June of 45.
Sure, sure.
So then the war ended while it was waiting to go overseas, and it was stayed there at Hamilton. It flew around. And then in 1946, the War Assets Administration sold it for the first time. So that was in fall of 1946, and it went to a guy there in California, wound up going to a holding company, and then it went up to Alaska Airlines. It flew from Alaska Airlines from 1949 to 54.
So what'd they do with the airplane?
Well, I've been trying to get a hold of Alaska Airlines. I've talked to them here at Oshkosh last year and tried to get some telephone numbers if they have a historical society or not, and I can't really get any good info on what Alaska did with it.
So if anybody out there knows Alaska Airlines,
yeah,
let's help Mark out, see if there's anything out there. But so you don't, but it was there. I mean, it was, and you, like you said, they took
I've got the paperwork where the COO signed for the airplane, and they flew it for 5 years.
Yeah.
Then they sold it to a couple of Bush pilots that owned it. And then in 1985, this guy up in Texas, up just south of Fort Worth somewhere, he flew L-5s in the Philippines in World War II. So he was looking for an L-5, and he found this one. They had it shipped down to California, and he and his son went out there in 85 and picked it up and brought it back to their place.
Yeah.
And I guess every morning for the rest of his life, he was getting up and going to restore it. And they, you know,
it never happened. Yeah.
So it was in a barn, and I'm not sure if it was up there by Burleson and when it made it to Llano, Texas, and when it made it to Medina.
Okay.
But it got shipped around some.
Yeah.
And so then we found it in the paper, and that was back in the fall of 2010, and fun began.
Yeah, well, it's amazing that airplanes survive that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Once they're apart, and you know, and so you're talking about the paperwork.
Uh-huh.
Where was the paperwork with the airplane? I mean, you had to have done a bunch of research to find this stuff.
Yeah, there's. There was really nothing with there. There's no log books or anything. And the only thing the FAA had on this airplane was some work that was done on it back in the late 60s up in Alaska.
Yeah.
You know, it had some skis put on it or something up
right there.
There was really nothing else. So we started from ground zero with the airplane. But Jim Gray, of course, you know, everybody in the L-5 community knows Jim Gray and the Sentinel Owners and Pilots Association. So we got with Jim, and Jim's the one that helped us research. You know, he gave me all the information that he found on, you know, when the airplane was accepted, et cetera, et cetera. And then when we got the FAA paperwork, that's where you start to find, you know, who the airplane owners were after the War Assets Administration had sold it.
Right.
And, you know, it confirmed what our serial number was for the airplane, what the frame number was. Of course, that's stamped on the frame here.
Right.
You just go down and, you know, it's massive internet searching for all this information.
Just throw in the serial number and hope something comes up. Yeah,
pretty much. And you know, you just keep going over and over and over. And
but the,
you know,
so the FAA did have some information once you dug
deep
enough.
They had the information on, you know, who had owned the airplane before, who, you know, the buy and sell information.
Yeah.
But they didn't have any information on logbooks or you know, maintenance history or anything like that, other than just that one entry from the late 60s. Yeah.
But that gives you a clue sometimes to start looking as well. So
Has that helped?
Right. So you've got the airplane here. You're talking about them flying it across country in 1945.
Uh-huh.
How was your cross-country ride?
I've got a great appreciation for that now. They were flying against the wind, so and we had just a little bit of tailwind coming up here. We still made 7 fuel stops coming from Dilley.
Yeah, yeah. And your passenger, he
wore
the seat out.
Oh, yeah, he was complaining in the back seat about how uncomfortable that seat was. We got to get a better seat. I said, well, this is the seat they had in World War II, and we are not doing anything. Maybe after Oshkosh, but for 5.5 years, we've been trying to get to Oshkosh.
Right, right.
And so there ain't nothing
except what
was in World War II in that airplane right now.
He just needs a vintage rear end to go with it then.
Yeah.
Well, it's a great-looking airplane.
Well, thank you.
And
I really
I know you've talked about Lanny and Taylor, and I've seen the stuff that work that they do, and I guess they've helped you with some bits and pieces
all the
and
normal,
information.
You know, Jim Gray and Duncan Cameron, Lanny Parcell, and Sam Tabor.
Yeah.
And, of course, Taylor's airplane that was an award winner here before, you know, luckily we got to see that in Fredericksburg and, you know, take a lot of some detailed pictures that we needed. right. to help us out because, you know, we have the blueprints for the airplane that came from, you know, the Stinson Volte factory.
Yeah.
And some of those are a little bit hard to read. And it was just so good to have the support of the L5 community helping us get this thing as right as we could.
Yeah, they seem to be a nice, tight-knit group of people.
Yeah.
A bunch of good guys, for sure.
Yeah, they really are.
So you've got it painted up in something Texas-centric
I was an Army pilot, and a lot of these liaison airplanes, L5s, are painted like the Army Air Force's liaison squadrons had.
Yeah.
And me being an Army aviator, Cobra pilot, I wanted to have the Army Ground Forces paint scheme on here. And so I wanted to pick an infantry division from Texas, and there are two of them that have their roots in Texas. It's the 36th Infantry Division, which is now the Texas National Guard.
Right.
And the other one is the 90th Infantry Division. And their emblem is a T and an O put together, and that stands for Texas and Oklahoma. And the 36th also is Texas, Oklahoma, because it has an arrowhead with a T on it. Texas. And I liked the 90th Infantry Division because it was part of 3rd Army. I liked the way that they had their airplanes painted with letters and numbers.
Yeah.
Yep. And having been in Europe, I've toured the battlefields where the 90th Infantry Division actually went from when they landed on D-Day with the 4th Infantry Division on Utah and worked their way across all the way to Czechoslovakia and accepted the surrender of the 11th Panzer Division on the last days of the war there. So I know all the places that they went.
Right.
And so I was very comfortable being able to talk about the 90th.
Yep.
And that's the paint job that we chose, Army Ground Forces.
There you go. There
and
you go.
I checked the table of organization and equipment to make sure. And later in the war, so let's just say approximately February, March 1945, the L5s did start making it into the Army Ground Forces. The vast majority of all of their liaison airplanes in the Army Ground Forces were L4s.
Yeah.
But you get a couple of L5s, you know, they have some surplus, and so they start pushing two of those airplanes out to each of the divisions.
Yeah.
And I'm going with the division artillery. That's a one-star general. You know, is he going to fly around in an L4 if there's an L5 sitting there?
Certainly not.
And if the two-star, the general commanding the division, when he needs to go and attend meetings and whatnot, he's not going to go in the L4 either.
Right.
So I have this painted up like it's the division artillery bird from the division headquarters of the 90th Infantry Division.
Did you find a photograph of one of those airplanes?
I cannot. I found three photographs of 90th Infantry Division airplanes. They're all L4s. Two of them are when they're in near Bastion in Belgium in January of 45, right after the Battle of the Bulge. They're on skis.
Yeah.
One of them is a little bit crashed.
Okay.
And I picked the 48 on the side is the side number that was assigned to the 90th Infantry Division. You don't want to put 90th on there because then when the enemy sees you, they go, "Oh, well, that's 90th." So they mixed all the numbers up, and the letter, each letter identifies, you know, the separate plane within the division. So I picked the letter that was farther down the alphabet because the L5s didn't show up until, you know, 45. They already had a bunch of L4s in there. And, you know, I got 48S for sugar is one of the pictures that I found of the airplanes on skis, and F for Fox.
Okay.
But I picked Kilo because I just liked the way that the K looked on the end of it.
There you go.
And I say Kilo. It meant King in the phonetic alphabet from World War II.
Right, right. Yeah. So that's awesome. So a little bit about you. If you don't mind, you said you're Army pilot.
You're from San Antonio. Yeah. I went to UT San Antonio. Got commissioned in the Army. I was a tanker. I was a CAV officer. Went to flight school. Flew Cobras with the 101st. I wound up inter-service transferring to the Navy, and I flew C-130s, EC-130 electronic warfare planes out of Patuxent River, Maryland, with the Navy. And when I got out of that, that was after Desert Storm. I was getting out, and I was thinking that, you know, the airlines were going to call me any day, and they didn't. And so, you know, when the phone didn't ring after the terminal leave falls out, I started looking around for another job, and I found a great job with U.S. Customs Service, and I flew with them in San Angelo for 6 years.
Flying helicopters, fixed wing, or what?
I flew Black Hawks, King Air Citation.
Oh, you're one of those black helicopter guys,
yes,
huh?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, one of those.
Black helicopter conspiracy.
And then I got hired by a major airline, and I still fly for that airline now.
Okay. Well, cool. Cool.
Hey, thanks for coming by today.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me, Matt. And no, I really appreciate y'all asking me to come over here.
Sure.
And we're just so happy to be able to take part in Oshkosh, and it just, you know, is an honor to be here.
Yeah, well, I hope your airplane does well up
Thank
here,
you very much. So, I really appreciate it.
We'll see you around the grounds for sure.
But All right.
I appreciate you coming in.
Okay.
Good deal.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks,
right.
Mark.
Yeah, that's fun.
Cool.
Mark, and we got Rob Collins stopped by over here.
Yeah.
Mike, send Rob on over here. He's they're Mike Hartman's back there. They're chatting, but come on over here. This is we couldn't find a better chair for Rob Collins. We got the old broken lawn chair there. That's the broken one there. But
it's the only chair.
Rob, look at this.
Swag from Mark.
Isn't that awesome?
Thank
Rob,
you.
Do you have any cool swag that you brought?
We have nothing.
Sorry. Look at this. You have to see his. You got to go see his L5.
It's over here in the show.
I've seen
spectacular
it.
L5.
Of pictures are one of our.
Thank you.
See ya.
So you brought two loose nuts here with you.
Indeed.
That's not a personal statement. It's about the new airplane.
It could be a medical problem of having two loose nuts.
It could be.
Yeah.
It could be.
It's a TF-51D, and its original name was Two Loose Nuts, and it's a spectacular airplane. Right now it's the only original Temco-converted TF flying in the world.
Wow.
There's only others left, and one's in South Korea.
Yeah.
So they're very rare aircraft, and it has an interesting history. It was the last TF in service in the Air Force inventory, and it went down to South America and survived as much as they did down there. It finally bellied in, and they sent it back up, and Transflorida or Cavalier used it as the template, basically, to make the Cavalier TF.
So what is the first one, basically, or...?
Well, this was a Temco converted one in 1950, so they had 15 that they converted for the Air Force.
Okay.
The ones that Cavalier did, my understanding is they were for the Indonesians, and they went straight over there. That was 1969 when they did those conversions. But what to me is really spectacular about the aircraft is you go up to it and you have that original panel on the side, and you can see underneath the green paint that they flogged on in the shark's teeth when it went down to Central America. You can still see the Toulouse Nuts name.
Yeah, that's
on
cool.
That cowl piece
that's cool. And you flew it up here with that cowl on there, you said.
Yeah, flew up from Florida with that cowl on there.
Yeah.
And people are wondering, they're saying, well, now, wait a minute, this is the Texas Warbird Report. And here's the segue.
Okay.
You know, I pride myself in being able to match anything. The segue is that this airplane will be coming to Texas.
Oh, sure.
It will be.
In the near future.
It was built in Texas.
Yeah. See, there you go.
So it was a K model then.
Well, now we have the Texas.
It's a Dallas-built airplane, and then it was... Then it was converted by Temco, which was North American Dallas's factory post-war.
Yeah.
So it's got a lot of Texas connections.
Well, my dad worked in that plant during World War II.
Is that right?
So you never know. Yeah. He may have thrown rivets on that thing.
He might well have.
Can I just go? I want to ask Rob something.
Ask away.
Have we ended with the absolute stupidity with the town supervisors up there in Stowe regarding the museum? Is that all behind us now?
Oh, the stupidity.
Or is it still... I'm going to be...
Stupidity is terminal, unfortunately, in a lot of cases.
But, I mean, seriously, the museum is not educational. Is all of that behind us now, or is it still...
No, it's not. So
it's still, we're still
had,
in
we
the fight.
We had two issues there in the town of Stowe. One is the museum issue of museums are not educational, therefore you can't build them. and that will be in court here shortly. And it's really...
But the judge hasn't thrown this out? I mean, like, how can you say that a museum is not educational?
They haven't even heard it yet.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, so they haven't even gotten pretrial briefs, so that will happen. And then, in addition, then they closed down the runway for some time, gave a cease and desist to a private landing area. That's back in service. The judge finally did throw that out.
Yeah, the locals don't have the...
Well, the town feels like they want to have the jurisdiction over aviation. And how is it that we know, as the town of Stowe, that these airplanes are safe.
Yeah.
We need to have someone there that can inspect them and make sure the pilots are safe. And you explain to them, yes, it's called the Federal Aviation Administration.
Yeah.
We're very heavily regulated. They already are there. And who do you have in the town of Stowe who has any knowledge on aviation?
Yeah.
And so the state of Massachusetts has a law which says towns cannot regulate aviation. Or if they do, the bylaw has to be passed by Mass DOT. Otherwise, you'd have airliners zigzagging around cities that don't want to have planes flying over. It would be a ridiculous law. So fortunately, we're got that behind us. But we like to focus more on the moving
well,
ahead.
You know, I understand that.
And beautiful Mustangs and things like that.
I think it's just important to say this because you have the support of your foundation and a vast, vast support network throughout the country. But there's a lot of folks who have small museums in their own backyard, and I don't think they realize the struggle that you guys go through on a daily basis with not only donations but just existence in general. And these problems are real. So I bring this up to say go support your local museum.
Absolutely.
And go support the Collings Foundation.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, thank you, Matt, for the plug. Support the Collings Foundation first and foremost. But if you don't, support any museum. Because this is really, there's a reason why they're called nonprofits. It's not because museums don't try to make a profit. It's just it's impossible.
Yeah.
And they're really struggling, and they're doing a great service for our kids so they can come out and see these aircraft or whatever it is that they're doing. They're preserving the history. They're saving it to keep the veterans' memories alive. And that's really special and spectacular, and whoever's doing it, they're all doing a great job.
I've always wanted to ask Rob this question. I'm not hijacking
you. Yeah,
but I want to ask Rob this question.
Sure.
Do you remember the day that your dad came home and told your mom or something? Maybe there wasn't this conversation, but hey, I think we need to be 17 for the foundation.
Well, it was an evolutionary
or a Mustang.
Process.
Yeah,
but there is a fun story with that, which had to do with a B-25 blowing an engine. And my mother got a 2600 as a Christmas present. And my mother said, "You're going to love the mink coat I'm going to get you." So, but it was because of coming here, coming to Oshkosh, going to back when that was the Harlingen, Texas Air Show.
Yeah, sure.
We went there, father and son, and the Collings Foundation was established. It was transportation related, but it was mostly automotive. It was coming and seeing these aircraft and being inspired. And there's probably some kids out here today that are getting inspired the same way. And in 30, 40 years, they're going to be the ones that are preserving these aircraft. And that's critical. And that's why Oshkosh is so great. Where else are you going to see all these things together and a lot of these special shows? You know, Thunder Over Michigan's another really special show to see warbirds.
Well, you guys participated in Wings Over Houston.
Wings Over Houston.
With your turbine, your jet guys down there,
that was
tremendous.
That was spectacular. That was so cool to see an F-100, an A-4, a MiG-17, a MiG-21,
the Sky Raider, two Hueys,
and a Cobra, all in the same airspace. They haven't shared that airspace since Vietnam.
Yeah.
And that was spectacular. So there's a lot of people who are going to get inspired, and they're going to be the next generation. And a conversation yesterday I had with someone who really gets this. He understands from the car community of how they've gone through a transition. You know, gone are the days when the pinstriping and the shiny chrome got you the awards,
right.
And it's now it has to be, this is the way it left the factory.
Yeah.
We want it stock, original.
Yeah, you see that on Barrett Jackson and that kind of stuff. They talk about this stuff.
Yeah, and he's the guy that pioneered this 40 years ago. Well, now the warbird community's catching up.
Mm-hmm.
And he and I had the discussion yesterday, and it was really poignant. We are a bullet point in the history of these aircraft. And a lot of people think when they own the airplane, that's the last line. It's not. We're all just there for a time being.
The current caretaker.
Come out here in a wheelchair in a few, 30, 40 years and see some other young person who was here as a kid now taking this on. And these aircraft have a life 50, 100 years, 200 years down the line.
Yeah.
Like the USS Constitution does. These are great historical artifacts, and they have to be preserved into the future.
Yeah. Well, and you guys do a great job, and, you have to do a segue but for Texas Warbird, but the Collings Foundation, they got some, all the F-4,
all
the A-4,
all
the jets
all the fast movers.
Are based in Houston, Texas, with Rick Harris down there does a great job with those and their volunteers and gang down there.
And our thoughts and prayers go out to Rick. He actually had a heart attack yesterday.
Oh, no.
But
I didn't know.
He's doing okay. And he is a
Lordy.
Fire plug for keeping that organization going.
Well, sure, our prayers go out to Rick and Ryan and the whole family down there. That's I know he had a neck issue and that stuff a couple of years ago. But, oh, Lordy. Well,
We're glad he's
Okay. All right. Glad he's okay. But and you guys spend a month at least in Texas every year on the tour, the Wings of Freedom tour.
Wings of Freedom tour will be back through Texas in March next year. Yeah. We'll be back in Dallas as usual at Frontiers of Flight, which is one of my favorite places. So great to be there, and in the Houston area, and probably normally a stop in San Antonio and Austin, and,
So. Well, it's always fun. I really enjoy. You guys coming through. You guys have been real good to me and Warbird Radio over the years. And my boy over here got to fly in the B-24. And she's
a Texas girl.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go.
And, and Betty Jane's a Texas girl.
Right.
And now we got another one. So we got a lot of,
tell us
Dallas
about,
blood here.
Now, the Toulouse Nuts there was restored, of course, in Florida there. Give us he never wants to come on the show, so I'll let you talk about the restoration, because it is gorgeous, and I saw judging it looked like going on over there. So
I just judged this morning. I tried to drag Ashley over here because he and the team he led are the ones that did all the hard work
down at American Aero.
Down at American Aero Services. I jumped in and in the last 3 days to wipe bugs off and all that, and come up here and kind of experience the whole Oshkosh glory, but. They, for the last 3 years, have been doing just incredible work on that airplane. Just absolutely stunning workmanship. The Lauterbach brothers have been involved. They did a lot of the wing plumbing. And, of course, whenever you can leverage that knowledge base of two guys who lived Mustangs for their whole life, it's really spectacular. So.
And if you haven't been around the Lauterbach brothers, as KT will tell you, who works with them on a daily basis, go watch the movie Secondhand Lions. And that's pretty much. I'm not talking about Lee. I'm talking about the other brothers that run the shop and stuff. But that's pretty much the way it goes around there.
They're
is what
twins.
She says.
They sit on the porch with shotguns.
They are twins, and they will finish one another's sentence. And when one gets involved in a conversation, the other one has to be.
Yeah. It,
but they have more knowledge. They've forgotten more about Mustangs than probably anyone else knows.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
They just have so much knowledge, which it's
well, and it shows.
Lucky to have them as part of the team.
To me, it looks like the most original P-51 here this year. When you stand back and look around out there, that is...
I'll tell you, there's some really spectacular Mustangs out there. And we're parked next to...
Sierra Sioux there.
Sierra Sioux, which is probably the most spectacular wartime Mustang. And I would say this is the most spectacular post-war Mustang.
Sure.
They're very different aircraft. They, when they converted them to a TF, it was a new airplane.
Yeah.
But... the way they went about it, the methodology was they had a wing. They weren't going to necessarily go and replumb the wing. So if you look inside the wheel well, you have all the AC fittings in there, because that's what it would have been.
Yeah.
But the fuselage is all the blue AN, because it was done in 1950, and that was the state of the art.
Yeah.
So they really went back and dug into, and there's not a lot of information on the TFs, because there were only 15 of them. But we looked at originals, and we looked at as much as we could find to try and make it. When you look at that airplane, that's the way it would have looked when it was in the West Virginia National Guard.
Well, and in your the scheme you've got on it, it's correct for the airplane itself, isn't it?
That is the airplane.
Yeah.
That is the way. We have a great picture of it when it was in the West Virginia Guard, and then pictures of it afterwards when it was olive drab with the shark's teeth when it went off to South America.
Where did it go to? Was it in what? In Guatemala or?
I think it was Nicaragua.
Nicaragua. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
In the B-17, the new 17 coming online here in the near future.
Shady Lady on the tour.
No, it's not Shady Lady. It's
I'm sorry.
It's what is it called right now? It doesn't really have a name.
Okay, but it's the Evergreen.
It's the
airplane.
Evergreen airplane.
Yeah.
The Evergreen.
The James Bond movie star airplane.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that has a history beyond James Bond. That was actually the Fulton Skyhook.
Yeah.
And that picked, that did, what was it called, Operation Deep Freeze or something like that, where they dropped these agents down onto an iceberg where the Russians had the listening stations for submarines.
Yeah.
And they would man them until the ice started to break up and they would fly out. And so they left the equipment there to continue to collect data, and it would melt, it would sink to the bottom of the ocean, no one would ever get it. They figured it was safe, it was up in the Arctic Circle. Well, these guys parachuted down onto this ice cap, grabbed up the equipment, and then they'd use the Fulton Skyhook balloon to go back up and get picked up. So it's a Cold War Warrior.
Yeah.
And before that, the thing was actually one of the five used by the CIA flying missions over China.
Yeah.
And I think three of them were shot down. Two were shot down by MiGs and one by AAA.
Right. Was it painted black?
Yeah, it was all black. And they had the little tail numbers they could change out on the vertical.
Right. Wow. To keep people guessing. Yeah.
How many they have.
Yeah. I guess there's like one photograph that I've seen floating around out there, the black B-17s in Asia. Yeah.
Yeah. So it didn't have combat history in World War II, but it had some interesting combat experiences in the Cold War.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. Which is an important thing there. So
it is, but it's not going to be painted black. It's going to be World War II. Airplane, so not to worry.
That's fine. But have you just settled on something you're going to paint? You're going to put paint on it?
We think so.
Okay. Yeah. Surprise, surprise for later.
Surprise for later.
Okay. Awesome. Cool. Yeah, when do you expect her to be online? For next year's tour, maybe?
No.
Okay.
I think it would be 2018 at the earliest.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah.
2018. Okay.
Right.
Good deal.
Right.
Thanks for coming by, Rob.
So you got another chance to see 909.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sure. That's it. Come on out.
Yeah. And Toulouse is going on the road, you said, in 2 weeks or
starting
next
in
week?
Valparaiso, Indiana. Okay. On the, it's the 5th, 6th, and 7th of August.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
And what are you going to do with Betty Jane?
Betty Jane's going to go through an IRAM.
Okay.
It's been out on the road for 8 years, and it's got 4,500 hours on her now, so she's going to get restored, and we'll come out looking beautiful like Toulouse nuts.
Cool.
Yeah.
Great, man. Great.
Thanks for my favorite
Mustang, Betty Jane. So.
Mine, too.
Yeah. It's beautiful. It's wonderful.
Although there's another one in the running now.
Yeah. Well, Rob Collins, thanks for coming on with us.
Thanks for having me.
And enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah.
And hope your airplane does well.
We do, too.
We're pulling for you.
Yeah.
Awesome.
All right. Cool.
Awesome job. Man, that's fun, Zane. You never know who's going to show up, do you?
No. This is the place. You know, I got my picture taken with Jack Roush yesterday. So I finally
that's
got
awesome.
That marked that off.
Got,
so.
Got to mark that off.
Yeah, the list. So.
Check that off the box then.
Right.
But, good deal.
Well, thanks for joining us. We are here live from Oshkosh 2016 EAA Air Venture in Wisconsin. It's a wonderful thing, and Mike Hartman's sitting here relaxing, and
Dad's back there, and Hunter's over here. We're ready to go.
Hunter's over here. So.
Tomorrow, Hartman and Hines kickoff.
Yes.
At 10 a.m.
I'm excited.
Yeah, we're going to have fun with
you. You look excited.
Oh, man, I'm tired.
So that's what you look like this morning when I first got up. So.
Exactly. I pretty much look like this all day long.
Well, Zane, thanks for hosting the show today. Everything's a little different. It's our special Air Venture week of broadcasting, and we're sorry that the ladies will not be here until much later in the week.
Oh,
and I have to run off to do an air show in Nebraska. So unfortunately their Oshkosh show will be delayed a little bit.
Well, that's okay. You can make up that.
I'm sorry, Kara. Sorry, Amy. But, Got yours in. We're going to get Hartman and Hines in. So.
Yep. Cool deal. This is Texas Warbird Report.
Signing off
from live from Oshkosh.
There you go. All right. We'll be back tomorrow with Hartman and Hines and more action from AirVenture 2016.
Yeehaw.
Like that. That's a good one. That needs to be the new one.
The yeehaw?
Yeah, just the yeehaw every time.